Birth, Chapter 31. How much damage can he do? I mean, seriously, he is a nobody that got elected president, said General Wes Morley. NORAD is an old community of defense contractors, career military personnel, and politicians. In the late 1950s, a plan was developed to construct a command and control center in a hardened facility as a Cold War defensive strategy against long-range Soviet bombers, ballistic missiles, and a nuclear attack. The mountain was excavated under the supervision of the Army Corps of Engineers for the construction of NORAD, Combat Operations Center at Cheyenne Mountain, beginning on May 18, 1961, by Utah Construction and Mining Company. The Space Defense Center and the Combat Operations Center achieved full operational capability on February 6, 1967, at a total cost of $142 million. The System Development Corporation was contracted to update Air Defense Command satellite information processing systems for $15.8 million on January 19, 1973. Although software was barely a notable concept in 1973, the beginnings of the Internet were called the Watts Line, and computer screens were black with green text and drawings. By 2008, the obsolescence of the hardware became undeniable to a political class that was less interested in warfighting superiority when all the original functions of the complex were removed to Peterson Air Force Base. President Obama became more interested in funding social programs and initiated a poisonous policy of sequestration that gutted the expansion funding across the board for military programs. The old NORAD facility, secured under 2,000 feet of solid granite, became nothing more than a training and simulation facility, or so the public was led to believe. Semyaza is a timeless being. He led a contingent of angels to Earth in the eons following the seeding of the planet by the Creator. 200 beings of immense wisdom and knowledge, with experience from numerous worlds covering hundreds of thousands of years, were assigned the task to watch over mankind. But the generations of mankind are very short compared to a Nephilim. There were several things that were immediately evident, but there was one unique aspect of this creation that existed nowhere else they had been before. Humans bred in a normal way. They coupled, just like any mammal found anywhere in the universe. There was an instinctive urge to do this, and the gestation periods were less than a year, and the cranial capacity was nothing short of phenomenal compared to all other forms of life. They not only responded to stimulus, but they adapted in mere moments to different conditions and situations. They could show incredible fits of violence and rage, but these same beings could also exhibit compassion and love that was very close to that of the Creator. What became apparent to them was that although the genetics of humans was programmed to grow old in a matter of moments, it seemed, the spirit inside of these bodies could gain experience and learn complex concepts and then remember them from generation to generation. Not all souls learned as well as others. Some could pass away in the flesh and then, through sheer desire, return to inhabit another physical body. Some of these souls could retain their skills from mortality to mortality. The Watchers became painfully aware of the importance of the Creator's claim that he had created higher Adam to be in their likeness. This was an ability that they would never have. Thus, they were given the ability to live almost forever. They gained wisdom and knowledge simply because they lived so long. They would not die for tens of thousands of years, and thus they could not reproduce between themselves. but what they learned while on the most fertile and beautiful worlds ever created almost ruined the entire creation. At first, the Watchers were content with teaching certain individuals on Earth how to do things. They taught the women about makeup and that the power of beauty was so great that if properly applied, almost any man could be weakened and destroyed. They taught men how to make swords and arrows, scimitars and spears, cannons and missiles. They taught men how to fight, and even more importantly, they instilled in them the reasons to fight. They created churches, and that it was impossible for man to approach God without going through one of them. Then they taught the leadership of each church that every other church was evil, and inspired each one to proselytize all other churches. The confusion was nothing short of divine. The Nephilim eventually became enamored with human women and helped develop them into the most beautiful creatures in the universe. Lucifer saw his chance to accomplish the greatest upset in all of existence. He awakened desire in the Watchers. His offspring, through the blood of his union with Eve in the Garden of Eden, was seeking dominance over the entire human race. But Adam's seed had been given the inheritance of the planet and were blessed in nearly everything they did. He convinced the Nephilim to attempt sexual unions with the human women as well. The moment they entertained the thought and asserted their desire, the Nephilim began their fall to the temporal earth. They discovered they were not only fertile with human women, but also with all forms of animal life. Their offspring were horribly twisted and grotesquely oversized for earth life. Tribes of giant humans were formed very quickly. Some of the giants were retarded and had voracious appetites. They forced humans to be their slaves, feeding them and caring for them. Generation after generation, the blood of the Nephilim spread. The first generation offspring were almost like animals, devoid of compassion or consideration for any other life than their own. They were short-lived and prone to debilitating arthritis and organ failure. They would wade into the sea and drown themselves rather than suffer as a crippled invalid. The next generation had more human features and desires. They could develop skills for fighting and for physical strategy. Within a few hundred generations, the pure seed of Adam was at risk of being bred out of existence. God's best creation was about to be wiped out through the lustful vengeance of Lucifer and his League of Nephilim. This earth upon which Adam had been formed was designed to couple with another earth upon which lower man was already well developed. But first, it had to be cleaned up. The genetic code needed to be purified again. The flood was decided, and the time for its application was set. For centuries, the giants pleaded with Enoch to be saved, to be preserved. For centuries, that answer was always the same. There was no and never would be any ability to save them. After 330 years, Enoch took his entire city and left the earth. Another group left the earth, knowing that their fall involved mortality, albeit they were virtually immortal. A few years later, Noah completed the ark, and that earth was merged with the temporal earth in orbit around a main-sequence sun on one of the outer belts of the Milky Way galaxy. The temporal planet, being constructed mostly of water, flooded them together and took more than 7 months to settle. When the ark came to rest, the seed of Eve walked into what was left of the existing race of man that had tilled the temporal earth for millennia. Among the seed of Eve were the seed of Adam and the seed of Lucifer. Within a few years, the Nephilim returned to Earth. This time, they knew they could not breed with mankind. They would conquer them another way. They would use the greed and lust of men to accomplish their master's goal. And when a man became humble, they would make him proud that he was humble. They would tempt him with more gold than any man could spend in 1,000 lifetimes. They would provide sex slaves and soldiers and weapons more advanced than ever seen before. They would give them victory after victory and influence the elements so that even in games of chance, they would win. Even presidential elections would be decided with games of chance, with every contest handed to the Dark Prince's disciple. With each victory, the commitment of that soul to the Dark Prince and his reward was made sure. One day, the evil support for that being would be taken from them, and they would be evil all by themselves. Then would come the betrayal. It always came. Often the sight of its approach was too great to behold, and they would take their own lives. They were led to believe that the overwhelming misery they felt as the betrayal robbed them of any pleasure their cars and planes, their private islands, and their stables of slave girls and boys brought them would end if they could only die. The truth is that the misery remained and followed them to the realm of the Dark Prince, where all of his converts reside. And when a new body is offered to them, it is only through his seed, which, although mortal, will never choose light again. They will seek darkness and are promised rewards only if they die in battle as they try to kill all the other mortal infidels. It is how the Dark Prince achieves victory over the Creator. And when a world is harvested through the separation of the union of the polarity, the souls left behind on the temporal planets are his for the taking. The misery of a world of noxious weeds, biting insects, and a wilderness that must be beaten into submission is fully appreciated when you add the perpetual hatred for those who escaped onto a world like unto the Garden of Eden. The most powerful rage of regret comes only when that soul realizes that the choice between those worlds was theirs and theirs alone, and merely a change of heart away. "You are a fool, General," said Semyaza. "The stars on your shoulder desecrate the rules of order by which you earned them. Mortals are like a small flame burning above a tiny sponge soaked with alcohol. You can cook a pot of soup with it, but when you pour liquid oxygen over that flame, you can lift a rocket into space with it." "Please enlighten me, my master," said the general. "Let me make it simple for your tiny military brain," said Semyaza sarcastically. "Riker just poured pure oxygen over the entire Earth. The humans, with any flame left, will blaze with power." "You know everything, master. How did Robert Riker, unknown to the world just a few months ago, walk into the world's most secure communications compound and make such a powerful change?" asked Wes. General Morlaix was an Air Force Academy graduate with a War College postgraduate degree. He was a master tactician. But during the period of President Obama's sequestration, Academy graduates were not immune from being fired, as they had been in years past. After 25 years of excellent service and the acquisition of his third star, he was introduced to Semyaza. Needless to say, all obstacles to his tenure and his utilization in the higher echelons of national defense were removed immediately. After nearly 5 years at NORAD, his contributions enhanced the space-based surveillance and nuclear attack systems until they were fully operational. They had the ability to not only immediately detect the ignition of a rocket with a nuclear warhead, but to deliver a tactical nuclear warhead to the exact origin of that rocket within 60 seconds. The hint of this capability was demonstrated during the late 2016 launch of a North Korean attack on the United States disguised as a spaceflight test. The sea-based launch was obliterated within 2 minutes of the launch. The news media was told to report that it was a malfunction in the launch by the North Koreans. The rest of the military community knew it was the space-based NORAD attack program, although the State Department maintained that NORAD was simply a training and simulation center. Of course, Semyaza had been working with the North Koreans to make the launch happen in the first place. If the missile reached its target, he won. If the missile was destroyed and the launch site was nuked in retaliation, he won. The purpose of his duty on Earth was to keep the battles coming without winning the war. In fact, if there was no declaration of war, it was even better for his purpose of economic enslavement of both countries. Every dollar spent on weapons was a dollar squeezed from the fruit of liberty in favor of security. "You are very clever for a human, General Morlaix," began Semyaza in his usual complimentary tone. "There are certain juxtapositions in time from which an almost infinite number of pathways connect. The third full moon of every year has its importance, as you might recall. The third new moon at the end of the age is paramount." "You are clever for a human, General Morlaix," began Semyaza in his usual complimentary tone. "There are certain juxtapositions in time from which an almost infinite number of pathways connect. The third full moon of every year has its importance, as you might recall. The fourth new moon at the end of the age is paramount because it begins the time of travail for the earth. It is written that she is about to give birth, but by promising world leaders the power to levy a climate change tax, I have convinced the masses that she was dying. I have also taught the religious leaders of this world that with every big change like this, as with every blessing, there must be a sacrifice of the same degree. There are now nearly 8 billion souls alive on the earth right now. For this change, I will require at least half of the souls on earth. We were on target to have well over that amount. There are only small pockets of resistance scattered around the globe, or so it was, before Riker's broadcast." His tone changed to foreboding and almost threatening. "The demise of planet Earth must take place in as much darkness as possible, but Riker's words, and they were astonishingly well arranged, has caused these pockets of light to begin coalescing. Soon, there will be strong connections between them, and a fabric will begin to form. If the Earth passes through the veil with this fabric intact, many thousands of years of focused effort on behalf of me and my team will have been thwarted. Do you understand me, General?" "I believe so," said Wes Morlaix, now slightly inflated with the notice paid to his genius. "The fever is always worse at night. Birth takes place only after the mother passes through a period of darkness to sever her child's spirit from its spirit home, locking it into her physical body until it dies. The darkness before the dawn is as necessary as the pain of childbirth." Although Nephilim are nearly 12 feet tall, they come with a variety of shapes and trim. Some have wings, some have feathers, while still others are covered in smooth, tiny scales. Some are quick and strong, while others are slender and articulate. Semyaza had a physical presence that was awesome to behold. He had a human shape to his head and face with wide-set eyes and a rather large nose. He had long, flowing blonde hair, but at the neck, his body was covered in short, fine fur. His arms were very long, and each hand had six fingers that were long and powerful. He has been the leader of the Nephilim here on the earth since the Garden of Eden. He was once as good as ever there was an angel. And now only the Dark Prince Lucifer was more evil. "Truer words I have not heard from a human, I do believe," said Semyaza smoothly. "I just want to make sure we're on the same page," said Wes. "I just want to make sure we're on the same planet, General."